But Mr. Perez de Cuellar has described the ceasefire as fragile, warning both sides that it would be in their own interests to move forward. However, despite a steady stream of compromise solutions suggested by the UN to solve the problem, neither Iran nor Iraq seem prepared to do the one thing which could break the deadlock, and that is to trust each other.
Christopher Powell reporting from Geneva. Now in Newsreel, a look at today's main stories. The big Lenin shipyard in Poland, the birthplace of the Solidarity movement, is being closed down. The yard has been making heavy losses, but Solidarity's leader, Mr. Lech Wałęsa, says his movement is prepared to run it. The date set for closure is December the 1st. In the Israeli-occupied West Bank, hundreds of people have been detained after Sunday night's petrol bomb attack on a bus in which an Israeli mother and her three young children were burned to death. The International Air Transport Association, representing most of the world's airlines, has again urged the setting up of an international commando force to deal with airline hijackings. This report from our air correspondent, Harold Briley.
IATA is intensifying its pressure to implement a five-point plan to internationalize the response to terrorism in the air. It wants an international military force set up to intervene whenever necessary, an international court to try hijackers, and an international detention center to hold terrorists to complete their sentence. It also recommends an international advisory group to be immediately available to support governments dealing with hijacks, and an international team of experts to investigate all terrorist and other unlawful acts against aviation to find ways of preventing repetition. IATA's other main anxiety is the soaring growth of aviation, doubling passenger journeys to 2,000 million a year by the end of the century, clogging the skies and the world's airports. It expresses grave concern that this growth could be strangled because the infrastructure has not kept pace. It calls for airport relaxation of night restrictions for the new quieter aircraft and for extensive building of more runways and new airports. But it says only exploitation of satellite technology on a global basis to provide communications, navigation, and surveillance services can overcome present air navigation shortcomings and meet civil aviation's future needs. It would save world aviation between $5,000 and $6,500 million a year.
That was Harold Briley. I'm Jasper Britton, and you've been listening to Newsreel in the World Service of the BBC.
BBC World Service at 15:15 Greenwich Mean Time. This is Kwabena Mensa with Focus on Africa. School students stage street demonstrations in the Sudanese capital. Somalia hits back at American criticism of its human rights record. 32 diners attacked by armed robbers in an Ivory Coast restaurant. Cape Verde's outspoken Catholic newspaper in the dock. And Nigerian power officials appear before a military tribunal. Tonight, in Focus. The Sudanese capital has been the scene since Saturday of street demonstrations which riot police have so far failed to stop. As Alfred Taban reports in this telex from Khartoum, most of the protesters have been schoolchildren.
Yesterday evening, hundreds of schoolchildren took to the streets in Omdurman to protest at the widespread shortages of basic consumer commodities in Khartoum. This morning, the demonstrations continued in parts of Khartoum South. Hundreds of students, accompanied by their parents, took to the streets, shouting anti-government slogans and demanding that they be given bread. A number of vehicles had their windscreens and windows smashed by the demonstrators. Riot police were called in, but no confrontations were reported. Khartoum has been hit in the past week with a severe shortage of bread. Most restaurants have closed down, and many of those that still operate offer food without bread at the same price. Sugar, too, a popular commodity in Sudan, has virtually disappeared from the stores. Transport has also become increasingly difficult in Khartoum, and many commuters in the city have to walk long distances on foot. The government, however, insists that both bread and sugar are available. The State Minister for Internal Trade, Bar Eldin Taha, said that 34 trucks loaded with wheat flour arrived in Khartoum last Saturday. Another official in the same ministry said that an American ship carrying 14,000 tons of wheat flour was recently unloaded at Port Sudan. Meanwhile, over 7,000 engineers and technicians working for the meteorological department went on a one-week strike starting at the weekend. The strike has disrupted air travel, as pilots depend on the weathermen for information about weather conditions. The striking weathermen say that they were forced to walk out because the government has failed to turn their department into a corporation, as it promised, and improve their conditions of service. Some 50,000 primary school teachers all over the country also marched out of their classes this morning to press for an improvement in their conditions of service, including a rise in salary.
The telex report from Alfred Taban in Khartoum. 11 officials of Nigeria's Electric Power Authority, NEPA, are to appear before a military tribunal today. It could impose life sentences if they're found guilty of sabotaging the economy. Nigeria is famous for its power failures, but this time charges of deliberate sabotage are being made. Power workers went on strike 4 weeks ago and blacked out the whole country for 3 days. Elizabeth Blunt has just been in Lagos, and on the line, David Hagi asked her if people in Nigeria are surprised at the strong action being taken against the NEPA officials.
I wouldn't say there was any very great concern among most Nigerians, because what you have to remember is that these people work for the country's most unpopular industry. People blame NEPA and the NEPA officials and the NEPA management for having made them suffer from power cuts endlessly all these years. They're not really very sympathetic to what these people wanted, which was an improvement in their own wages and conditions and an improvement in the financial basis of the industry, which would have meant electricity prices going up.
Why do the government particularly want to clamp down on these individuals? What's in it for the government, do you think?
Well, I think the government has found a section of the trade union movement which it can bully, if you like. If you remember, there were very widespread strikes in Nigeria back in April that affected the whole country, nurses, bank workers, and the threat of other groups such as petroleum industry workers coming out, that really did have the government very rattled. And those were political strikes. They were striking against the government's economic policy. In a way, that sounds more dangerous, but although a few people were arrested and held for a time, they weren't charged even under normal criminal laws. They certainly weren't faced with the military powers, the special powers under these decrees and military tribunals. The government, I don't think, would have dared because there would have been too much opposition. It could have caused a general strike. This group is a very small group. They're not members of the main electricity workers' union. They're members of the much smaller senior staff association, most of whose members are fairly apathetic. The ones I spoke to really didn't know much about it and didn't care much either. And I think the government thinks it can get away with it in their case, and in so doing show other strikers that it is prepared to use this kind of anti-sabotage decree in industrial disputes.
So if the real lesson is intended for the other more powerful unions, have the other unions come out in support of the electricity workers?
Not openly. I did talk to a spokesman for one of the more militant unions, who said they were certainly worried by the implications, particularly by what seemed to be the government's inability, in his words, to distinguish between sabotage, this sort of treasonable sabotage, and a normal industrial dispute, which they felt this was. I don't think they feel terribly strongly on behalf of the electricity workers, but I think they're seriously worried about the implications of using military tribunals and military decrees and state security decrees against people who've taken industrial action.
Our West Africa correspondent, Elizabeth Blunt.